I'm going to turn your attention today to 2 Timothy chapter 4. I'm going to read three verses today and going to preach from all three of those verses. This is Paul writing, and he says this, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." So I'm going to endeavor to be done in about 25 minutes, and I want to preach on this thought, finishing well, finishing well. God bless you. You can put your phones down, your Bibles down if you were following along. It is, of course, the last Sunday of 2025. It seems like the new year only just began. How many of you feel like this year has gone by extremely fast? You know, they said when I was a kid that the older you get, the more time seems to go fast, the faster it seems to go, and that has proven to be the case. Maybe it's because life is busier, I don't know, but here we are at the end of 2025, the last Sunday of the year, and it just seems like it should be March or something. Now, I do know that, of course, next Sunday, the first Sunday of the year, by then, what's going to happen next Sunday is that the New Year's resolutions that you have made this week, you're going to start those on January 1st, or if you're like most people, you're going to be like, well, January 1st, it's a day to celebrate. Let's start them tomorrow. But by January 4th, that next Sunday, many of you, the resolutions you had intended to make, or you may have started, or you just decided forget those, you're going to have already left those behind. How many of you, once again, it's last Sunday of 2025, how many of you had New Year's resolutions that you have kept all year long? Anybody, how many of you made New Year's resolutions last year? Okay. Only one person. A couple, okay. All right, how many, and so, anybody else? Here's your last chance. I'm going to preach just to these two people, the rest of the, no, I'm just kidding. So, okay, did anybody keep your New Year's resolutions from last year? Let's put it that way. Anybody, you set out to do something, exercise 5 days a week, eat healthy, whatever. All right, a couple. Now, here's what I know. Most of the rest of you, you really did have something you were going to do in the new year, and you have given it up. It is what people do. They start off really good, and then they don't finish well. But it's not how you start, it's how you finish. It's not just endeavoring to do something good and maybe even to begin to do that good thing, but it's how you finish that really counts. The Bible would say that the end of a thing is better than the beginning. You read that in the Minor Prophets, and maybe you just read that. The end of something is better than the beginning because how you end is much more important than how you start. You can start really good and end bad, or you can start really bad and end good, but the end is the most important thing. How you finish is important. King Saul, he is the first king of the nation of Israel. He started out as a farmer. He was a farmer with a farmer's mentality. He was called upon by God to be king of Israel, but he didn't want to be king. In fact, the Bible uses this, King James at least uses this, when they could not find him, when the prophet is looking for him to anoint him, the prophet is looking for him to on God's behalf to make him the king, This man who had been a farmer, even though he was of lofty stature, he stood head and shoulders above everybody else in Israel. He was humble. In fact, the Bible says he was hiding among the stuff. How's that for specificity? Hiding among the stuff. He's hiding. Why? Because he's humble and he doesn't want to be king. He doesn't think he qualifies to be king. He doesn't think that he should be king. He doesn't think that he has the gifts, the talents, the abilities to be king. And so he doesn't want to do it. So he does his best to hide away. But nonetheless, he is anointed king of Israel. And it's not too much longer to after he is anointed king of Israel than the farmer's heart that is in him becomes that of a king. And just as God had prophesied, he begins to do things that kings do. When God had told the people of Israel, you don't really want a king because kings do what kings do. And kings are going to want to take stuff from people. They're going to want to tax the people. They're going to want to have power. They're going to want to have authority. They're going to want to do this and that and the other. And you're not going to like it, but God let them do it anyway. And so King Saul started out in humility, but it wasn't long before he ended in pride. Things like, when the prophet says, wait on me to get there before you do anything, before you go into battle. Things like, you're a king and I'm the prophet. I offer the sacrifice. You don't offer the sacrifice. Things that Saul would never have done before he was anointed king. Now as king, he begins to understand his rule and his reign and his role in the world. And he decides that he doesn't need the prophet. If the prophet is late, I'll just step into his role. If the prophet doesn't get here on time and on my schedule, I'll just reinterpret what God has said and do it my own way. And Saul ends up with the kingdom being taken from him, and he kills himself on the battlefield because he's wounded unto death and he doesn't want to die at the hand of the enemy, so he takes his own life. He falls on his own sword. His descendants are not going to be king because God has already anointed David to be king. The end of a thing is more important than the beginning. It is not how you start, it's how you finish. The one who started in humility ended in pride and death on a battlefield. King Solomon, David's son, the third king of the nation of Israel, he started out really well. God even gives him a vision. And I realize that many people think that Solomon made this wonderful choice all by himself. Where the choice is put to Solomon, do you want wisdom or do you want riches? But if you read the text, what the Bible says is this, is that God gives him a dream. And in his dream, God asks him, do you want wisdom or do you want wealth? And in his dream, Solomon chooses wisdom and God says, I will give you both. God tells him in advance, this is what's going to happen. I'm giving you the right answer up front. When I ask, this is what you ask for. And sure enough, Solomon asks for wisdom and he gets it. And God says, I'm going to give you wealth. And Solomon became the richest man in the world. And people from all over the world, royalty, would come to see his house. They didn't come to see the temple. The temple was grand. The temple was amazing. The temple was awesome. But they came to see his palace, which was even more grand and more awesome. He had lots of wealth. But Solomon started out trusting God. And in the end, Solomon trusted the wisdom that God had given him. How do we know that? How do we see it? Well, he had combined 1,000 wives and concubines. That's just not very smart. But it's more than just being not very wise. Because the reason he had 1,000 wives and concubines is this, because Solomon, who trusted God, decided that he would trust in his political alliances that he could orchestrate and he could organize. And the majority of those wives were the royalty from other nations that Solomon would go and marry, and he would go to the king and he'd say, I'll marry your daughter, and it will seal an alliance between our nation and your nation, and then we don't have to worry about going to war with one another. And so he married royalty after royalty after royalty from other nations. Why? Because he didn't trust God to be the protector. He didn't trust God to take care of them. He decided in his wisdom that he could take care of it better than God could take care of it. And Solomon, who started out so great, didn't end up so well. Why is that important? Because the end of a thing is more important than the beginning. Finishing well is more important than starting well. Our text is about, written by the Apostle Paul. Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles, Paul, the apostle that would write 13 books of the New Testament, he didn't start out so well. At least not from a Christian perspective. He started out pretty good in life. He had a pretty good position in life. He had a really good education. He would say of his own education, I was a Pharisee of the Pharisees. I studied at the feet of Gamaliel, one of the greatest rabbis of the day. He said, I studied at the feet of Gamaliel. I knew all about the Jewish law, and I knew everything, the ins and outs. I knew all of that. And he says, I was zealous for my Judaism. I was jealous for the religion of my ancestors. And Paul, whose name at the time was Saul, would persecute the Christians. Saul standing by, watching Stephen get stoned to death. And the Bible says he was a young man at the time, and he stood by. More than likely, he encouraged it. Incited the crowd to pick up stones and stone Stephen for preaching about this Jesus. And here's what the Bible says of him. He's standing by. He's holding their coats. He didn't pick up stones and stone Stephen himself. He just encouraged him to do it. And he said, let me hold your coat so you can throw that stone a little harder. Let me hold your coat so you can do it a little better. Oh, you don't want to have any restriction when you're taking the stones and you're throwing them at him to kill him for his testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Saul, who would go make his way on the road to Damascus, going specifically to hunt down Christians so that he could put them to death if they did not recant. That same Saul has a life-changing experience on the road to Damascus as a bright light shines from heaven and blinds him, and a voice speaks to him, and he falls to the ground and he says, "Who art thou, Lord?" And the voice says to him, "I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. It is hard for you to kick against the goads." And Paul then has this conversation with Jesus, and Jesus tells him to go to a street called Straight, and he would find a man named Ananias who would tell him what he needs to do. He started off persecuting Christians, but he ended up a convert to Christianity, preaching that same gospel that he was trying to extinguish, preaching that same gospel he was trying to kill, reaching out to the same people he was putting to death. Why does it matter? Because finishing well is more important than starting well. So I've given you two sides of the equation, people that started well and ended badly, or people that started poorly and ended well. I would rather be the person that started poorly and end well and finish well, because if I don't finish well, heaven will not be my home. Because heaven awaits us, we must finish well. What does it mean to finish well? Why should we be concerned about finishing well? First, we're going to look at how to ensure that you and I finish well. And then briefly, we will look at what would keep us from finishing well. There are way too many people who start out good, but they don't finish well. So how do we ensure we finish well? The first thing Paul mentions is this. It's that we are to live sacrificially unto the Lord until the end. I get that from this verse, for he says, I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. Odd words to use. I know you've never used that in your life. I'm being poured out as a drink offering. None of you ever, you didn't work that into your conversation this week. It's not normal for you and I to say that kind of thing. But for Paul, who understands his Jewish heritage and his Jewish roots, he knows exactly what he's talking about. The drink offering typically would consist of wine or oil, and it would be poured around the altar. At times, it was those who didn't have the animal sacrifice. They couldn't bring the animal, so they had to bring either a quarter of a hin or a third of a hin of oil or wine. And it's H-I-N. A hin is 5.7 liters, for those of you that care. It's a significant amount, because oil from the olive is precious, and the fruit of the vine is precious. You can't just run out and get it. And so when you didn't have the animal, you would pour out the drink offering unto the Lord. You would say, God, this is for you. I'm giving this. This maybe it's the last of the oil that you have, or the last of the wine that you have, and you would pour it out unto the Lord. And Paul would say, I'm being poured out like a drink offering. I'm a sacrifice unto the Lord. I have given my life in a sacrificial way since my conversion. I have given my life in a sacrificial way to the Lord. He says, I am already being poured out like a drink offering. There's just a little bit of time left. Because here's the deal. Paul is converted in Acts chapter 9. He becomes a Christian, a follower of Jesus. And immediately what he seeks to do is to begin to preach the gospel. I wish more people were like that. And when I say preach the gospel, he's not teaching home Bible studies. He's out in public, like, let me tell you about Jesus. Showing up at the synagogue of the Jews that he was just working with, said, let me tell you about Jesus. Showing up at the Christian gatherings, and let me tell you about Jesus. I've been persecuting him, but let me tell you why you should follow him now and how to follow him now. And he begins to do this, and the people are like, we know who you are, and we don't trust you. You were on your way to kill us, and now you're saying you had this conversion experience. We didn't see it. We're not sure we believe it. You're not preaching to us. And Paul has to ultimately flee the city because the Christians are not very trusting of his conversion experience. And then in Acts chapter 13, Paul gets called to be a missionary to the Gentiles, the apostle to the Gentiles. He's in a prayer meeting in Antioch. A lot of good things happen in prayer meetings. You can hear the voice of the Lord in a prayer meeting. You can be called of God to do something great in a prayer meeting. I would just encourage you, if you have time to be in corporate prayer, find a time to be in corporate prayer, because God does great things in prayer meetings. And in a prayer meeting, God calls him to be a missionary and an apostle to the Gentiles. And he embarks upon three major missionary journeys You can see that as you read through the book of Acts, or you can flip to a hard copy Bible and you can look at the maps and see Paul's missionary journeys. And each one will be in a different color as it maps out where he went. I don't know, how many of you know there are maps in the back of the Bible? We live in a digital age. You can learn a lot from those maps, by the way. But here's Paul, 2 Corinthians chapter 11. He begins to list out all the things that have happened in his ministry. These are just since he's been preaching the gospel. He says, are they ministers of Christ? Speaking of other people, I speak as a fool. I am more of a minister of Christ. In labors more abundant. And he's showing people to say in their apostles, let me tell you what I've done and what I've seen. My labors have been more abundant in stripes above measure. That's beatings. In prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night in the deep, and a day I was in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches, who is weak? And I am not weak, who is made to stumble, and I do not burn with indignation. He says, I've been beaten, I've been shipwrecked, I've been in prison, I've been in danger more than anybody else. He says, I have lived sacrificially. My life has been poured out for the gospel and for the cause of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And now, he says, after all of that, the time of my departure is at hand. 2 Timothy is his final letter. He is, for lack of a better term, he is on death row. He's writing from prison, a prison from which he will never leave, at least not alive. He says, the time of my departure is at hand. Just the last few drops. Just the last little bit is being poured out of my life. I'm ending my life in prison. Shortly, they will cut my head off. He says, it's sacrifice. How do I finish well? I live sacrificially. Right until the very end. It's not just sacrificing when I'm in my 30s or 40s or 50s, but I sacrifice and I live my life unto the Lord until the very end. It doesn't stop when you turn 60. It doesn't stop when you turn 70 or 80 until the very end. I am living sacrificially unto the Lord. I am living first the kingdom every day, every hour, every year, every decade from the time you start following Jesus until the end. If you want to finish well, you have to be first the kingdom and live sacrificially until the end. Not only do we need to live sacrificially unto the Lord, but we must also finish the course. He says, I have fought the good fight in verse 7. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. He uses 3 different analogies here of fighting the good fight. And he uses that to the extent, I didn't give up. I didn't stop. I kept fighting until the end. I kept preaching the gospel. I kept doing what God told me to do. I finished the course. God had a path and a plan for me, and I've gotten all the way to the end. Death is the last and final thing that's coming. And he said, I have finished the course and I've kept the faith. I didn't just start out believing, but I have kept the faith. What I started out in Acts chapter 9 when I was converted, I've kept the faith through all of those tribulations and toils and trials and troubles. I have kept the faith. Understand, there is no retirement from faith. Some people think that retirement means we quit going to church. I'm retired from my job, so I don't have to go to church anymore. I retired from my job, so I don't have to pray anymore. I retired from my job, so I don't have to pay tithes anymore. I retired from my job, so I don't get involved in the kingdom anymore. But there is no retirement from the faith. And unfortunately, there's way too many people who think that they're in for an early retirement. I started out, but now I'm retiring from my walk with God. There is no end to your walk with God until you get to heaven. There is no, I put my time in and now it's time to take it easy. Our course starts at the new birth and is not completed until we depart this life, either through death or rapture. Amos, the prophet, would say this: woe to you who are at ease in Zion. People that become at ease in Zion are easily led astray. People that become at ease in Zion decide that they've done enough. It's time to take a break. But there is no break from your walk with God. There is no break from your relationship with God. We don't date Jesus and take a break. We're all in for Jesus. And thirdly, how do we finish well? We finish well when we anticipate receiving our reward at the end. In the future, he said, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. We are created to, and were created to live forever. This life is only temporary. The psalmist would say it this way: we get 70 years, and if by strength of days we get 80, man, that's a good long life. With modern medicine and everything else, you could live longer today. But no matter how long you live physically here, it's only temporary. We were created to live forever. And so when we're done here, we have to spend an eternity somewhere. This life is but a moment, it's but a vapor, it's temporary. But what I do here determines where I spend my eternity. Oh, there are blessings along the way, but there's also tribulation along the way. In this world, we will have tribulation, Jesus said, but we also get his peace and we get his joy and we get his presence and we get a little bit of heaven on earth. And I'm thankful for every bit of heaven on earth we get. Every good and perfect thing comes down from the Father of lights, in whom there is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Every good thing in my life comes from him, and I'm thankful that I get some heaven on earth now. I'm thankful that I get to experience his presence and encounter his presence, and that I get the fruit of the Spirit, love and joy and peace and gentleness, long-suffering, meekness, faith and temperance. I get all of that here, and I get sometimes I get healing here and I get deliverance here and I get blessings here. But even those blessings are temporary. It's what's going to take place on the other side that is important. And Paul said this, he said, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness. That crown that says you have achieved what I've called you to achieve. That crown that says you have lived like I've wanted you to live. That crown that says you have made it. It's that same crown of righteousness that we see in the book of Revelation where the elders will cast them at his feet. Why? Because they understand they're not worthy and they don't deserve it. You and I don't deserve it, but he's going to give us a crown anyway. It's given by the righteous judge. It's given to all who love his appearing. But it's only given to those who finish well. Starting well doesn't get you the crown. As Anna comes to the piano, starting well just means that you started well. There's no prize for starting well. Nothing is given to those who start well. I think I'm going to get this correct. I just saw it pop up. My brother and now my parents, they live in Indiana. My brother's a football fan. In fact, he sent me a text yesterday and said, "Are you going to watch Mizzou in their bowl game?" So I sent him a selfie with my Mizzou sweatshirt, and he laughed. They lost. LSU lost. My childhood college team. I saw a thing that popped up yesterday on ESPN. It was after one of the NFL games yesterday. Indianapolis Colts. My brother's a fan. First team in the Super Bowl era to start out 8-2 and miss the playoffs. They started out so good. They faded along the way. Injuries. If you're a Chiefs fan, we didn't even start out good, so you know. There's no Indianapolis Colts. They started so good. Let's go ahead and just give them a trophy. It's about how you finish. It's about how you end. I could tell the children's story of the tortoise and the hare. That rabbit, that Wesley rabbit. He started out so good. Man, he was fast. Way out in front. Poor little turtle, short legs, squat body. I'm not talking about anybody here, just the turtle. He didn't start out so fast. No doubt, the rabbit is out of sight. But if you know the story, the tortoise just kept moving. He just kept going. He just one step in front of the other. Nothing awesome, nothing amazing. Just one step in front of the other. And he won the race because he finished well. Rabbit. Oh, I got time. Take a little detour here and a detour there. I can't even see the turtle. He's so far behind. But it's he that endures to the end the same shall be saved. It's how you finish. It's not how you start. You got to start to finish. But how you finish is what really matters. You can look around on any given Sunday and see people that started. Or any given Sunday and see people that started that are no longer in the race. So we looked briefly at, we looked at how to finish well. Let me just take just a moment, and I'm way past time, on what would keep us from finishing well. Why don't you go ahead and stand with me? What would keep us from finishing well is when things get difficult, when there's too much month at the end of the money. I didn't think it would be this way. I didn't think it was going to be like this. I thought God would just take care of everything for me. They got difficult. Or when relationships fail you. When people fail you. It's a point where some people get out of the race. When health fails you, cancer or heart issues or some other disease, some other difficulty, it causes people often to lose their faith. Those who started out well, that sickness or that disease will keep them and push them away from Jesus. For others, it's when your faith or your truth is questioned. When other people question it, like, why do you believe that? I can't believe you believe that Jesus is the only way. I can't believe in 2025 that you don't think that's archaic and outdated, that you would believe such a thing. Or maybe when your own questions arise, did I really experience what I thought I experienced? Is God really there? There are things that cause us to drop out all along the way. Things like what the children of Israel did when they've crossed the Red Sea, and then they're like, we had it so much better in Egypt. And here's what they say, why they had it so much better in Egypt. We had garlic and onions and leeks. Something wrong with their taste buds. They were enslaved in Egypt. They couldn't do what they wanted to do in Egypt. They're getting whipped whenever and beaten with whips by the taskmaster when they don't do enough work and do it fast enough. But we had garlics and leeks and onions. When you misremember what you were really like in the world, and when you misremember what it was really like before you met Jesus, people lose their faith and they don't finish well. Oh, I had it so much better when I was miserable with a hangover and I couldn't remember what I did the night before. It's just a false ideology. That's the devil playing games with people, but they start questioning their faith and they lose out with God. But you and I must become grounded in the truth and remain faithful in relationship to Jesus. Paul would say of one of his fellow ministers, Demas. Demas started out with me on this journey. Demas was my fellow companion in the gospel. He's preaching the gospel in all of these cities. But somewhere along the line, he said, Demas hath forsaken me. Demas has left me, having loved this present world. He started off good, but he ended poorly. To end poorly in the kingdom is to not end in heaven. The parable of the sower and the seed. I use it often. It's the only parable of Jesus where he explains all the details. Four kinds of soil, three of those receive the word, the seed would take root and begin to grow. But only one of the seeds actually took really good root and produced fruit 30, 60, 100-fold. The stony ground and the thorny ground. They received the word, but it didn't last. I just want you to understand that starting well is not the goal, but ending well is the goal. And I know this last Sunday of 2025, you're going, yeah, I'm here. And you're planning on finishing well. And I believe that you will, but I just want you to make one more commitment before we go into 2026 that I'm going to finish well. 2025 is not going to be the greatest year of my walk with God. 2026 is going to be. And then 2027 is going to be even greater. And then 2028 and every year until the Lord tarries, I'm going to keep growing and I'm going to keep pushing forward. I'm going to keep overcoming the struggles. I'm going to keep overcoming the obstacles and I'm going to keep moving forward because I must finish well. So I've told you, if you would, I want you to go ahead and everybody make your way to the front. I'm getting ready to wrap it up. It's the last thing. John Mark, who would write and pen the words of the Gospel of Mark, he wasn't necessarily the eyewitness, but he's writing Peter's account of it. John Mark, he was kind of young, a little immature, a little irresponsible. The Bible speaks of his mom, his dad's probably dead and not in the picture. That makes him probably a mama's boy. Which is okay. He's Paul's companion on his missionary journey, and somewhere along the way, he doesn't forsake Paul because he's loving the world, but he forsakes Paul because he's ready to go home and be with mama. Paul has a falling out with his fellow companions over all of that. But in the end, here's what Paul says about John Mark. He had a rough time. He had a rough patch. I don't know if I can trust him to go with me. But Paul then calls him out. I want you to make sure you say hi to John Mark for me. He is profitable for me in ministry. He didn't start off too well, but John Mark ended pretty good as he writes the Gospel of Mark, and he is Paul's missionary companion again. And Paul said, he's profitable for me. Ministry. It's about how you finish. If you desire to finish well, would you just lift your hands and lift your heart and lift your voices, and would you ask God to work in you one more time, that you would encounter him one more time? God, we want to commit ourselves to you completely and fully. God, we commit ourselves to being what you have called us to be and what you want us to be. What you want us to do, God, we're going to do it. This is glory.